Now
on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
The Saturday Morning Update.
Good morning. It is the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. Jeff Wolf is behind the console this morning. And former President Trump came out last night and talked a little bit about what he intends next. He was on Truth Social, and we're going to get into that in just a moment. The Inflation Reduction Act likely will do everything but reduce inflation, but we'll talk about that as well this morning. A lot of concerns about the investigation at Mar-a-Lago. We'll have some of the comments on that coming your way this morning. James Carville, the gift that keeps on giving. He talked to The Hill this week. Whoa, boy, that's an interesting stuff that you'll hear coming up shortly. You may have heard that Brian Stelter, CNN weekend host, Reliable Sources, he's off the air. He's no longer with CNN after this weekend. It's kind of funny, you know. There was a Washington Post column, The Reliable Source, and then he was Reliable Sources. And I think the Post column came along first. But anyway, let's talk about the latest from President Trump. The former president warning on Friday that he would file a, quote, major motion against the FBI and the Justice Department before the midterm elections. And this coming from his posts on social media. He says the motion will be related to the Fourth Amendment, which protects citizens from unreasonable searches and seizures by the government. The warning, which was part of a rant on his social media platform, Truth Social, coming in the wake, of course, of the FBI raid on Mar-a-Lago. He said, quote, a major motion pertaining to the Fourth Amendment will soon be filed concerning the illegal break-in of my home, Mar-a-Lago, right before the ever-important midterm elections. My rights, together with the rights of all Americans, have been violated at a level rarely seen before in our country. Those the comments of the former president. Now, we've heard a lot about the release of the affidavit and more information. We saw the release of the search warrant, but the affidavit would have a lot of information in it that the Justice Department wants to keep out of the public eye during their investigation. A hearing was held on Thursday. Judge Reinhart said some of the information should be released. The Justice Department to come back in a week with their suggested redactions. Now, redactions will be the word of the upcoming week, and there are a number of concerns about redactions and explanations. Jonathan Turley is a pretty straight shooter, legal scholar. Here's what he had to say.
What we're interested in is how that information was presented. Was it presented faithfully and truthfully, given the past record of the FBI and the Department of Justice in Trump investigations? They have routinely been accused of redacting too much out of material. I've been in cases where I've challenged that. They use this strategically. And part of the problem is if they go and redact too much, they can delay release. They can go on appeal and fight this a little longer without releasing the information.
Alina Habba is a member of the Trump legal team. She was on the Fox News Channel Thursday night.
I think that there won't be very much transparency. I would expect that we'll get a lot of black ink all over that piece of paper. If I was the DOJ, a Biden DOJ, I'd probably be redacting everything other than the word and the. So we're going to have to see what they kick back.
And Chuck Grassley is a really bright senator, has been there forever and continues, in his efforts for transparency at the FBI and the Department of Justice. And here's what he had to say yesterday on the Fox News Channel.
I think considering the fact that this is the first entering of a former president's home for potentially information, whatever they think's wrong, plus the way Hillary Clinton's negotiation and emails were handled, Steele dossier, Carter Page, FISA, you can name a lot of them. there's evidence of you handle one thing one way for Democrats and another way thing for Republicans. And I think I've proven some political bias in regard to Hunter Biden and Trump in the FBI. So I think full transparency is what's really called for in this very extraordinary situation.
Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa. Now, we've got the Inflation Reduction Act, and there's so much stuff in the Inflation Reduction Act that has nothing to do with inflation and will likely inflate the problem even worse. This is Nancy Pelosi explaining $60 billion of it right now.
In that bill, he has $60 billion for diversity as we meet the challenge of the climate crisis. It's about inclusion. It's about investing in our children, our future, our education, in research. It's about doing so in a way that is respectful of great diversity of views.
And that is Nancy Pelosi, of course, $60 billion on diversity. There are a lot of billions of dollars going into some strange things in the bill. We have Jim Banks' comments last night appearing on the Fox News Channel. This is what Congressman Jim Banks of Indiana had to say, and he's, of course, on the Republican side of the aisle.
Well, now they're coming clean after they passed the bill, after President Biden signed it into law. Nancy Pelosi is telling you, actually, she's telling you the truth in this case. That doesn't have anything to do with inflation. Jason, there are massive tax increases on working class Americans in this bill. There are actually tax increases on manufacturing businesses. I represent the district in America that has the most manufacturing jobs per capita. And under President Trump, we return good-paying manufacturing jobs back to America more than ever before. So now with the Democrats in charge, we're going to tax those jobs out of existence. This bill is dangerous, it's radical, and it's going to hurt working-class Americans. And people are waking up to it, and there's going to be hell to pay on Election Day.
Well, we'll see how Election Day turns out. You may have seen some of these poll numbers now are not trending so well for the Republicans, and we'll get into that in a couple of minutes. But I want to turn to New York, the bout between New York Mayor Eric Adams and the Texas Governor Greg Abbott continues. The Texas governor sent two more busloads of migrants to New York, arriving there yesterday, and the back and forth continues. And here's New York Mayor Eric Adams and his warm feelings about the Texas governor.
It's the worst type of politics. It's hateful politics to raise his national profile. And you know what? You should not be doing it by taking away the respect and dignity of people who are in need. What the Texas governor is doing is just so anti-American.
Huh. Well, here's the response of Greg Abbott.
He didn't say that to President Biden when President Biden was flying people from Texas to New York. And so he's really nothing more than a hypocrite. He's playing politics with all of this. He's also being a hypocrite because New York City is a self-declared sanctuary city. And so why he's ever complaining for one moment about these people being bused into a city goes against his own self-declaration of being a sanctuary city.
All right, so that will continue in the weeks ahead. And, of course, Mayor Bowser's chimed in as well. But really, the duel seems to be right now the situation between Mayor Adams and Texas Governor Greg Abbott. We're at 6:18. It's time for a check of the traffic. And Albie D is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
In D.C., on 395 northbound, there is construction. This is at the 12th Street Tunnel exit 3. Traffic is jammed from 110 in Virginia. Maryland side of the Beltway, it's clear in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. In Montgomery County on 270, no delays between the Beltway and Frederick. In Virginia on 66, you're at speed eastbound and westbound. In 95 in Virginia, I don't have any reports of any construction or crashes northbound or southbound between the Beltway and Fredericksburg.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
The Saturday morning update continues. Something I saw, and it was a little bit troubling, a guy named Sam Harris, he's a liberal pundit and has a podcast, and he was on another podcast called Trigonometry. And what he's done here is kind of reveal some things and just kind of boasting at what some of the Democratic and liberal initiatives have gotten away with. Hear it for yourself. Here's Sam Harris. Crazy stuff.
At the 11th hour, when who knows how this election is going to go, who knows what the capacity for, you know, disinformation at the last minute to tip the balance is, then what do you do with the Hunter Biden laptop story when we already know, we know how this played out in 2016 with the Hillary Clinton email, you know, press conference?
Well, he had some other choice words here.
At that point, Hunter Biden literally could have had the corpses of children in his basement. I would not have cared.
Well, maybe you wouldn't have, but I think some other people may have. And this is kind of the kicker, the admission of the conspiracy.
That doesn't answer the people who say it's still completely unfair to not have looked at the laptop in a timely way and to have shut down the New York Post's Twitter account. Like that's a left-wing conspiracy to deny the presidency to Donald Trump. Absolutely it was. Absolutely. Right. But I think it was warranted.
Okay. Thinks it was warranted. So you can cheat. It's fine. If you're a Democrat, you're a Republican, get subpoenaed. It is 6:21. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And this morning we will be talking with Jennifer Harper. She's got some interesting political stories coming up for us, including Sarah Palin, who is moving on in Alaska in her efforts to come back to Washington in the Congress. Lisa Murkowski also moving ahead in Alaska. Liz Cheney will be moving out of her congressional office. Liz Cheney losing in a big way in Wyoming. Interesting thing about Liz Cheney, she had a $15 million kitty in the campaign. $15 million. She spent $7.5 million of it, so that means she's got $7.5 million to play with for whatever she runs for next. A lot of speculation about, will she run for president? We'll talk to John Gizzi about that coming up this morning. Kind of interesting. You may have seen the video of the thug up in New York sucker punching a guy on a New York street. Absolutely no reason. Fractures the guy's skull. The guy's in the hospital. Surgery. He's in a coma. And the New York DA, the geniuses in New York, let the guy out. Cashless bail. Attempted murder should have been the charge, but it was a simple assault. So they let him out. He's back on the street. Doesn't pay bond or anything like that. So New York Post puts it on the front page of the New York Post. Fox News Channel's all over it, playing the video every 15 minutes. Finally, the governor of New York takes some action, Kathy Hochul. So she has the guy rearrested on a parole violation, running victory laps for doing that. And why did the liberal Democratic New York governor actually put a thug back in the slammer where he belongs? Because it's an election year in New York. Of course, she is the governor by default because of Andrew Cuomo's problems, in which he had to resign. So Kathy Hochul takes over his job, not elected. She just, becomes the governor, having been the lieutenant governor. So she's got to be elected to become the full-time governor moving forward. So she wants to look tough on crime for the next 2 months until the election, and then it'll be back to normal. 6:23 Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. And as I said, we got Jennifer Harper coming up, Jim Trusty, our legal advisor. We've got John Gizzi on the way. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, get the latest on Ukraine, the new weapons that we're going to be sending to Ukraine. The tensions continue between China and Taiwan. Taiwan had its own military exercises this week. We'll get Tony's read on that. And then KT McFarland always puts all the big stories in perspective for us. All coming up here on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Nosing around, you know, surfing the web, looking for news stories and articles, and I find a headline from Joe Concha, opinion writer at The Hill. The headline on it, Biden front runner for Lie of the Year award as many in media look the other way. Well, what's he talking about? Here's what he's talking about.
I just want to say a number. Zero. Today, we received news that our economy had 0% inflation in the month of July. 0%.
Yeah. Well, as Joe Concha points out, quoting Joe Concha here, the Biden administration has attempted to redefine what infrastructure means. It's not only about improving roads, bridges, and power grids, but also about paid family leave and child care. And what a recession means, it's not two straight quarters of negative gross domestic product growth anymore. But it just moved into the lead to win the Lie of the Year award with the claim that the U.S. economy is experiencing zero inflation. The facts? Inflation still stands near a 40-year high and came in at 8.5% in July. These are the same folks that are bringing you the quote-unquote Inflation Reduction Act. And you do know that the president has a real issue with a border wall. And I think they allowed some, you know, a couple hundred feet to be constructed down there to fill a gap or something. But in general, President Biden campaigned against a border wall. Well, you'd be happy to know that $500,000 of your tax dollars are going to a fence around the president's beach house. A $500,000 fence around the beach house. So I guess fences are okay to protect you, El Presidente. But when it comes to the border, oh, no. Can't do that. 6:30, we're going to check the news next. Stay with us on WMAL. Back with Jennifer Harper. She's got some interesting poll numbers. As we mentioned, we would get into some of the Republican polling. That's coming up next. Stay with us.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
In the news at 6:30, a fire at a munitions depot inside Russia has forced the evacuation of two villages near the Ukraine border. Two civilians reported wounded by Russian shelling near a major nuclear power plant in Ukraine. Both sides trading accusations about fighting near the facility in southern Ukraine, both accusing the other of the possibility of a false flag attack on a nuclear facility. A British man nicknamed one of the Beatles by his captives because of his English accent has been sentenced to life in prison for his role in the death of four U.S. hostages captured by the Islamic State. Prosecutors say El-Shafi El-Shiki is the most notorious member of the Islamic State ever to be convicted at trial in a U.S. court. And a leaked video that shows Finland's 36-year-old prime minister dancing and singing with friends at a private party has triggered a debate among the Finns about what level of reveling is appropriate for their leader. The video, clearly shot by someone at the party, leaked on social media, caught the attention of Finnish media this week. The prime minister has faced a barrage of questions about the party. Were there drugs? She actually took a drug test to show that it was only alcohol involved at the party and that she had no drugs in her system. It's 6:34, time for a check of the traffic with Al BD.
In D.C., on 395 northbound, there is construction. This is at the 12th Street Tunnel exit, exit 3. Traffic is jammed from 110 in Virginia. Maryland side of the Beltway, it's clear in Prince George's County and in Montgomery County. In Montgomery County on 270, no delays between the Beltway and Frederick. In Virginia on 66, you're at speed eastbound and westbound. In 95 in Virginia, I don't have any reports of any construction or crashes, northbound or southbound, between the Beltway and Fredericksburg.
And the WMAL forecast, we've got a high temperature, 88 degrees in the sunshine today. For tomorrow, 40% chance of showers with a high of 83. 60% chance of showers on Monday, high 82. Tuesday looks sunny with a high 86. More sunshine on Wednesday with a high of 88. 70 degrees in the nation's capital, 6:35, the Saturday morning update on WMAL.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday Morning Update. Thank you for being with us. I'm Rick Fowler. Jennifer Harper joins us every weekend, and she brings us up to speed on what's going on inside the Beltway. She writes at the Washington Times, of course. And there seems to be some shifting around in the Republican political circles. What are we hearing down in Florida?
Well, whenever we talk about Florida these days, we're always talking about two gentlemen named DeSantis and Trump. And both of them are sort of on that, they're going to run for president in 2024 list. And most interestingly, I mean, in past weeks, Mr. Trump has done pretty well in a lot of these polls, and everybody knows him, and they would like him to come back. But now we've got Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, and he might just be getting better than Mr. Trump right now, and at least in Florida. And as we all know, you know, Florida, along with some other states, are always watched, like New Hampshire, et cetera, as to what the voters are thinking. But there is a new poll out there of registered Florida voters who was conducted by the University of Northern Florida. And here's what they say. Republicans were asked who they would vote for in a hypothetical presidential primary between Ron DeSantis and Donald Trump. Of those respondents, 47% said that they would vote for DeSantis and only 45% for Trump. Might be worrisome for someone who lives right there in Mar-a-Lago. And 7% said they would vote for somebody else. And they also asked whether these two politicians were allies or real friends. I thought that was interesting, coming from a university poll. And they said respondents were asked how they would characterize DeSantis and Trump's personal relationships, to which 47% said they were acquaintances, 42% said they were friends, but only 8% think of them as enemies. And, of course, if you're putting all these little things together, you wonder, are we going to have a Trump-DeSantis ticket coming up in 2024? But that remains to be seen. But that's your DeSantis-Trump report for today.
Well, Mike Pence is making political headlines these days, too. What's the latest?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we talked about this previously. He has a book coming out in November, and that's usually a little signal that somebody's thinking of running for something. But the press is watching him very closely now, and here's just a couple of headlines that came out in the past 48 hours. Pence's latest public parting with Trump fuels more 2024 speculation. That came from ABC News. Pence calls on Republicans to stop assailing the FBI after Mar-a-Lago search. That's the New York Times. Mike Pence says he's considering testifying before the January 6th committee if invited. That's CNN. And let's just do one more. If Pence won't testify, he has no business running for president. That came from the Washington Post. So meanwhile, you know, we've talked about this before. Mr. Pence is kind of going through the motions of an emerging presidential hopeful. He's been out in Iowa. He'll be there through today, I think, and he's been going to the Iowa State Fair with Senator Chuck Grassley. That's always a presidential indicator when they go to the state fairs. And there'll also be events in Des Moines with the Iowa Faith and Freedom Coalition, very powerful group out there. And he's already visited South Carolina and New Hampshire as well. So, you know, trying to be something for everyone in a potentially crowded field isn't typically a recipe for success. That's somebody who's been watching all that. That is GOP strategist Jim Merrill. He's told this to InsideSources.com, a news organization, because he was asked, is Pence going to run? He says, I think it's a viable candidate. And he says he talks a lot about what he did in the administration. He's sort of offering Trump without Trump. Interesting comment there.
So how about a former vice presidential candidate on the Republican ticket making a comeback in Alaska?
Oh, yeah. Well, here she comes, everyone. Sarah Palin has returned and definitely, you know, running for an open congregational seat, congressional seat in her state. And, you know, she's got several dozen other hopefuls in this. And but anyway, she is kind of returning to her Mama Grizzly state. It's very interesting. You know, she's kind of candidate Grizzly right now. And she's 58 years old, but you would never know that. And along the campaign trail this week and before that, she is still remarkably stylish and wearing great high heels and other things like that. And here's what she says. As your congresswoman, I will do everything in my power to help drain the Washington, D.C. swamp. She said this in a statement. And she was also voicing her contempt with the weaponization of some of our federal agencies, as people have been talking about lately. And she has the endorsement, of course, of President Trump. She also has Ben Carson on her side. And he says Sarah knows what it took to make America strong and prosperous under President Trump, and she'll fight every day in Congress to bring that greatness back. And, again, that's coming from Ben Carson, and she's got Senator Rand Paul, Ronny Jackson, Louie Gohmert, Newt Gingrich, Rick Perry, remember Rick Perry, and Nikki Haley. Also over in Fox News, Sean Hannity, Mark Levin, and Dan Bongino are all in her corner. So Sarah's definitely somebody to watch.
Well, she'd like to get in the Congress, and the Congress might use some fresh blood, according to some polls you've got for us this morning.
Yeah, well, Congress, let's talk about Congress. I've got a nice straightforward poll for you this morning. Not too many numbers this early, but this is coming from an Economist YouGov poll conducted very recently, August 7 through 9. And overall, they find out that 58% of U.S. adults now disapprove of the job that Congress is doing. And 36% of this group strongly disapprove of the way that Congress is handling its job. 22% somewhat disapprove. And when you go to ask how many actually approve, about 14%. 10% are like, meh, you know, somewhat approve. Another 4% strongly approve. So that's not a very good record there. And also 16% say they approve, don't approve or disapprove. They're kind of like, yeah, whatever, Congress is doing it. Again, this is an Economist YouGov poll. The basic numbers there, 58% are disapproving right now, and about 14% approve. So not so great for Congress.
Seems like everybody's getting in the movie business, and what, Fox News is getting in the movie business?
Well, yes, this is very interesting. I'm always amazed at how innovative they can be over there. And this is coming from Fox News Media, and that kind of is the whole realm over there in Fox News. And they have something called Fox Nation, and it is a video streaming platform. Now, get this, Rick. They are set to release their first original feature film made in-house. How about that? And they're going to have three more next year. The name of this film is called The Shell Collector. It's going to premiere on September the 1st. This is a best-selling title of the same name by an author named Nancy Nagel. She's very I had not heard of her, but apparently she's got lots and lots of books. So this is the, you know, video platform. Don't have it 24 hours a day. It's very cheap to get on there. But anyway, according to John Finley, he's the executive vice president of development over there. He says since launching less than 4 years ago, Fox Nation has established itself as a go-to destination for lifestyle and entertainment programming. So, They're aware that there's opportunities everywhere beyond news and beyond, you know, hard commentary and so forth. And he said that this forthcoming production, this is Mr. Finley, saying it's a perfect fit for our first title. So look for The Shell Collector coming on September 1st on Fox News Media.
Well, you know, summer's almost over. It means back to school, and it means back to parties. And you got one coming.
Yes, we certainly do. This is one of these you must take a peek and take a look. This is the Media Research Center 35th Anniversary Gala. That's a very interesting and actually a fun party coming up. This is a conservative press watchdog. A lot of folks know Media Research Center. And they have staged this black tie gathering since 1987. And it's got a great cocktail hour, really good dinners, a lot of fantastic speakers on these events over the years, and they essentially get up there to talk about conservative media programming, commentary, and so forth. And the theme of the gathering this year is the Night of the Unwoke. And you can look for politicians, pundits, media personalities, and smart activists. And we'll have to mention certainly our favorite morning host, Chris Plant, is among the speakers there. He's always wonderful as a speaker, along with columnist Cal Thomas and Kevin Robert. He's the president of the Heritage Foundation, Kristi Noem will be there, along with Bo Snerdly. You remember Mr. Snerdly. He was the executive producer for Rush Limbaugh, and he's now on actually with his own radio show on WABC in New York. And also Mark Meckler, who's president of the Convention of States Foundation. Again, the date is September 21st. It's going to be at the National Building Museum. God, is that a fantastic place. It's made of terracotta. I looked all this up myself. And stone and 15.5 million bricks. It was built between 1882 and 1887, so it's a really big deal. If you want to find out about this great event, you can go to mrc.org, the /, of gala. Again, that's mrc.org/gala, and that's the Media Research Center's 35th anniversary gala. A lot of fun and good-humored and cheerful, too.
Jennifer Harper, inside the Beltway at the Washington Times. Keep up with her during the week on Twitter at Harper Bulletin. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rick. Have a good day, everybody.
6:46. This is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Jim Trusty up next. Then we'll have John Gizzi. Also, Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, KT McFarland on the way. And right now, we'll head over to the WMAL Traffic Center, and Al BD is there this morning.
Good morning in D.C. and 395 northbound. Traffic is stop and go between the 14th Street Bridge and the 6th and 7th Street exits. In Virginia, around the Beltway, looked at the cameras. It's clear on the inner loop and on the outer loop. No crashes or construction. On 66 in Fairfax County, go ahead and set your cruise control. Lanes are clear, eastbound and westbound. On 95 in Virginia, you're not tapping the brakes between the Beltway and Fredericksburg. Northbound and southbound lines are clear of any delays. And now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL StormWatch 7 forecast.
We're looking for sunshine today with a high temperature of 89. We have a 40% chance of rain for Sunday with a high of 83. More rain on Monday, 60% chance with a high of 82. Tuesday looks sunny with a high of 86. And Wednesday, sunshine with a high of 88. Our overnight lows for the next 5 nights should be somewhere between 68 and 70. Right now in the nation's capital, 70 degrees, 6:47 on the Saturday Morning Update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. Jim Trusty joins us, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington, former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the U.S. Department of Justice. Jim, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
And I know that you are now representing the former president on some of his legal matters these days. And there's certainly a lot going on in the media and in the courtrooms.
Yeah, it's busy times, and I think we'll probably have some pretty important filings coming up in the near future, so stay tuned.
Jim, we've talked a lot about the lack of enforcement of the law around the country, the lack of prosecution, the district attorneys in many of the major urban areas. And an example this week, we saw the video of a man who randomly punched a stranger in the back of the head, sent him to the hospital. He's in a coma, and it's turned out that he is a convicted level 3 sex offender. He was on lifetime parole. They let him out without bail on Thursday, and then the New York governor did a 180 on Friday. First off, tell us what a lifetime parole means.
It means the system has failed. How about that? Look, I mean, the idea of having someone on parole for their entire life is one of these misplaced feel-good moments where you say, look, we're releasing someone from incarceration, but he is literally the worst bet for recidivism that you can come up with. That's the only way you could justify a lifetime parole. Most states and certainly federal court doesn't even have a jurisdictional hook to allow for parole throughout your entire life. So New York, again, is kind of putting itself out on a limb, creating something that sounds really tough to victims or prospective victims, but effectively it's giving up on that particular individual and suggesting that they pretty much know he's going to reoffend, which is, of course, what happened here.
Well, there was so much video coverage on the Fox News Channel. The New York Post had it on the front page of the paper. So the New York governor, Kathy Hochul, takes action on Friday. She is running to officially be elected to replace the former governor, Andrew Cuomo. So tell us what the governor did and how she gets involved in this.
Well, she gets involved because she reads the papers and sees TV, and this was essentially not letting a crisis go to waste. And frankly, the stories are beginning to blur together of injustices in New York based on their bail reform law that kicked in back in May. But the bottom line of it is she saw the opportunity to be tough on crime for at least a nanosecond, and she jumped in and she directed the probationary authorities to revoke his parole based on a violation. She basically said, I've seen the video. You're going to end up revoking his parole. Do it now. So in this case, he has been stepped back, as they call it. He's been rearrested for the parole retake. And look, she deserves credit for doing the right thing, but it's really putting a finger in the dam while the water's bursting all around you. You know, it solves this particular case, but the story itself underscores how broken the system is when it comes to New York's bail reform.
So we see the focus on Alvin Bragg, the New York District Attorney. But what about the other prosecutors? I mean, how does this work in the system?
Well, what it's doing, what bail reform is doing, is probably drawing attention to some of the bad charging decisions that are made by prosecutors. You know, the whole premise of this bail reform was that somehow it was unfair, that it was, you know, rewarding people that have finances and punishing people that were poor. And that's not really how it worked at all. It's a long story or a long explanation. But when you get down to case after case after case, thousands of cases that wind their way through the system, the biggest initial moment for bail is the determination by the prosecutor of what they're charging, because the bail reform is determined entirely by these broad classifications. Attempted murder, you might be locked up. Assault, you will not. In this case, the victim is in a coma with a fractured skull, but the prosecutor charged simple assault. And so it gets swept into that broad, overbroad category that allows for the guy to be turned right back out on no bail.
You know, with the tension in politics and the tension in the country, we need a light moment. And there's a story we talked about, and it had to do with chalking tires in Saginaw, Michigan. And a federal judge has just made a ruling. So for people that missed us talking about it before, a quick summary of what's going on and what happened this past week.
Well, the really quick summary is judicial lunacy. But the longer version is this. What we talked about, and it's been a while, Rick, I think it might have been about a year or two ago, was we had a woman who was a scofflaw in Saginaw, Michigan, because the way they would track how long you parked in front of a limited parking zone was to have a meter maid come up and chalk your tires. And I used to see that at the beach from time to time going to, I think it was Bethany. And that way, if the chalk line on your tire is still there when they come back an hour and 5 minutes later, you give them a ticket. It's kind of an old-fashioned way to track the time, and one that I don't think too many people take exception to. But in Michigan, they had a class action with 2,000 plaintiffs who had been saddled with 5,000 tickets going to the federal court and getting another ruling on this issue of whether chalking tires to track potential parking violations violates the Fourth Amendment. Now, I'm not convinced the founding fathers were thinking about this one, but the issue became whether or not it's a search, and if it's a search to go on to your private tire to mark it with chalk, then is there a need for a search warrant, which seems a bit much to expect from the meter maids in Saginaw. So the Federal Court of Appeals in Michigan decided this issue and said that the de minimis exception to the warrant rule, meaning that it's so small a thing it doesn't even require a warrant, somehow didn't apply. I'm not sure I really can figure out where the judges were coming from on this. And so it's a big win for Allison Taylor, who is the lead plaintiff, who had $14 in her winnings for the tickets that she received over the last 3 years. Now, to class action, the lawyer's probably going to take about 30 cents out of each ticket. But Allison probably had a decent lunch this week when she won that. And, you know, that's kind of the amazing thing. We have these life or death issues across courthouses in the country. But in Michigan, they're fighting up many levels of courts on the idea of chalking your tire. And I guess what I would say is, you know, it's fun to talk about these things. It would be kind of hilarious to be a part of it and watch the oral argument on it. But I can pretty much promise the people in Saginaw this is a Pyrrhic victory. They're going to get rid of the chalk, but I have a feeling parking enforcement is going to get a lot tougher in the years to come. So be careful what you ask for when it comes to litigation, and, you know, query whether it's worth the $14 that you win as the plaintiff.
Well, we're just talking about a federal judge. Now we got federal charges for a fired court mediator violating a law banning the mailing of hazardous materials. 77 years old. What did he do, Jim?
Well, he did a pretty crappy thing, Rick. This is a retired mediator. Now, let me just tell you, if you haven't ever met a mediator, they are people who specialize on bringing people together and resolving their differences. They are literally peacemakers in the world of the criminal justice and the civil justice system. And unfortunately, our 77-year-old retired mediator was observed by a postal inspector driving up to a drive-up mailbox, put a letter into the mailbox, and the inspector noticed with keen eyes that the man was wearing a latex glove when he dropped off the letter, which is always a little strange, even in the pandemic world we live. So the postal inspector pulled the mailing out of the box and saw it was addressed to Congressman Jim Jordan. And inside the mail, the little love note, was a greeting card, a dollar bill, and a healthy dose of human feces. And it turns out that this former mediator had sent numerous identical types of love notes in Ohio, from where he lives, Mogador, Ohio, to various political figures in California, Kentucky, D.C., and Ohio. So, Mr. Richard Steinle, it's not your best day. You may have broken off from your mediation past a little roughly, and he's now facing federal charges that could land him in jail.
Something new every day, Jim. I knew we needed some levity this morning. I think we got it. Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. Follow him on Twitter at Trusty Lawyer. Jim, thank you.
All right, Rick. Have a great weekend, and check your mail carefully.
That's funny. Jim Trusty, partner at IFRA Law here in Washington. We're at 6:57, Saturday morning update. We got the news coming up next, and then we're back with John Gizzi, and we'll take a look at some of the primaries that happened this past week, and we got a very interesting one coming up in the week ahead. So stay with us right here on WMAL.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL.